You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner and Mike Grenham set for this week's action. We've got the Lioness Open and the FedEx St. Jude Classic to focus on very, very shortly. I'm going with Lioness. Should it be Lioness? After the Dean and DeLucia pass the other week.
Yeah. Oh, and this one, I'm less sure, Dave. I think Lioness myself.
Yeah, I think Lioness as well.
But I wouldn't bet on it.
No, I wouldn't either. It was a good week last week for the golf podcast. We had seven selections and in total between three of us, and three of them placed.
That's right.
A couple in the European event, and Justin Thomas for you in the American Championship last week. And it was an amazing performance from Jason Duffner, though, wasn't it, last week?
I know. Weird.
It was such a strange performance to break the 36-hole tournament record, then drop down the leaderboard with a 77 on Saturday and storm back on Sunday to win, doing all that with that putting stroke as well.
Now, that's the key thing, isn't it? The third round, 77, could have been any score, couldn't it? Because he was putting as badly as I do in that, and he just looked to have lost all confidence, didn't he, in it? And then to come back, well, it's great credit to his mental resilience that he played so well on the Sunday, unfortunately. I thought Justin Thomas had a great chance of winning that, actually. But yeah, Duffner, he showed some real resilience is the word.
Yeah, it is. It is. Justin Thomas did grab that full place, and he had that 10-footer for par after the rain delay, which he made, then missed two short putts on 13 and 14, and then failed to birdie the par 5 when in a perfect position off the tee, and that cost him.
Massively so, yeah, absolutely. If they'd have gone in, it'd been different, wouldn't it? Good, his first proper finish at the Memorial, but I think he'll contend there for a number of years.
Yeah, I agree.
That was one that got away, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, definitely. We talked about
it. It really was.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I thought he was going to win on Sunday night. On a couple of occasions, I thought he's going to get into the lead and then just kick on from there.
Yeah.
He did show a little bit of frustration and temperament at times.
He always does that, doesn't he? He's a bit like that, I think, yeah. I don't mind that.
Would that concern you when it's a slightly tougher test and you've got even a tougher test than Muirfield Village, where you've got to be a bit more patient?
Could be. It's an interesting theory, but depends how well he puts that little outburst of temper behind him. I get your point. You think of something like the US Open, he might be too temperamental to win. I think he's got a good chance there, the way he's playing myself. But yeah, I take your point. He's quite open with how he's frustrated, isn't he? I think probably a lot of players feel it mentally. They just don't quite show it.
Yeah.
He's a talented, though. Talented.
Also a talent. The European Tour winner this week, Renato
Paratore.
Yeah,
a player that you've been talking up for a little while, but you didn't do him last week.
No, I didn't have him on my mind, in all honesty. No. But 20 years old, and he's got a unique swing. He reminds me a little bit of Webb Simpson, the way he swings the club. It's almost that sawn off follow through and really brisk temper. One of the quickest players on tour, Paratore, by all accounts as well. And he played brilliantly under the gun to win last week the Nordea Masters, because Chris Wood was in a commanding position, and Paratore reeled him in and put pressure on Wood, who then drove his ball into an unplayable lie on the last hole. So Paratore, it looks like he's going to be a star of the future.
Yeah, let's hope he continues a little bit better than his compatriot Manassero, who's equally a prodigy and has struggled a little bit in recent years. I still think Manassero will come back. He's got so much talent, but Paratore looks very interesting.
Let's move on to this week then. We've got two events. We'll start with the Lioness Open, and Bernd Wiesberger is the 4-1 favourite. Joost Luiten is 10-1. Gregory Bourdie is 20-1. James Morrison, 25-1. Julian Suri is 25-1. Jaco van Zyl is 28. Benjamin Ebert is in the betting at 33s, along with Dylan Fratelli. And it's 40-1 and bigger the rest. We begin this week with a low-key event on the European Tour.
Yeah.
the combination of a relatively low prize fund and the fact that it's the week before the US Open means that you're never going to get the European Tours elite in the lineup. And it's a decent event
in its own right, and it's good to see mainland Europe events, isn't it? And but the field is not stellar.
No, it's good to see that this sort of event still exists on the European Tour as well, because given that it is low-key and it doesn't attract the elite of the game, you'd think it would find it difficult to maintain.
But they
be a constant
keep it going
on the tour.
Nice, they do. Yeah, fair play to them. I haven't actually got a bet in this week's event, but I looked long and hard at it because there's some. I was tempted by a few, and I certainly wasn't put off by the fact that it's not. It's not a major or whatever. It's not the greatest event of all time. There's plenty of decent prices in there if you're willing to take a chance.
It's good that Wiesberger supports it as well because it's home open, played in Austria. It's been played at the Diamond Country Club for the last 7 or 8 years now. And the course itself is a par 72 measuring 7,417 yards. A neat and tidy short game has been key to success since this course began hosting back in 2010. And Bernd Wiesberger obviously has won the event before, got an incredible record here, and his ball striking has been exemplary over the last 6 weeks as well. So he's clear favourite. Were you ever tempted by Wiesberger at 4-1?
Yeah, I can see you could easily be tempted by him, dear, because he's won this event, he's been second here, and he's in cracking form, isn't he? Didn't play amazingly well at Wentworth, but finished 30th at the end of the day in what is a top event. He was 12th in the TPC and then a win and a fourth in China. So, you know, that's good form, isn't it? And
You'd be surprised if he wasn't in contention on Sunday, wouldn't you?
In the back of mind, I have that 1 year where he went a bit mental and missed the cut, didn't he? And it was a bit... he played really strangely, but that was the year before last. But, I respect his chance a lot, and in this field, 4-1 does look a bit short. But what do you think?
I think with Chris Wood withdrawing, I think if Chris Wood had been in the field, and you were getting 6-1, 13-2, 7-1 about Wiesberger, it makes it a much more palatable betting opportunity from an each way perspective as well. I think you'd want to back Wiesberger each way in this event. But at 4-1, when we're betting at a 50 odds first six places, you're not quite getting your money back if he places.
Near enough, though, aren't
you? Near enough. You're not far off a bet to nothing.
Yeah.
You'd like that little bit of profit if he did finish in the top five without winning, sort of top six without winning, as the case may be. So I wouldn't put anyone off backing Wiesberger at 4-1, whereas sometimes with the market leaders in these events, you think they're a little bit too short.
Exactly.
I think that's about the right price.
Yes, it is. I mean, Joris Lauten's a player I like a lot, but he's not playing quite well enough at the moment. He's got a good record here as well. But if I was to pick one of those two, I'd rather have the fours Wiesberger, I think, at the moment.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. I'd much rather have Wiesberger at fours than Lauten at tens.
Yeah, so that's kind of my view on it. Are you having a bet in the race?
I'm not having a bet in the event. There's a few I want to mention, though.
It's me too.
Go on, you go first then.
Well, Eddie Pepl was eighth in the Nordea last time out after a run of eight missed cuts in 11 events. 40-1 is not enough to tempt me in, but it'll be interesting to see how he plays. The player, I think he's a decent player when he's on song, so he could look decent value in this event if he gets back to his best. But 40-1, having said that, doesn't look fantastic. Then I just looked at a few outsiders, guys who've played well here before, three guys who've played well here before, and are guys who can win on tour. Lee Slattery is around about 100-1 when I last looked. He's got a ninth and a fourth here in the last 4 years and was 11th in the Rocco 40 event a couple of events ago. So he's not completely out of form, albeit all three of these that I'm about to mention have been racking up the missed cuts a little bit. But yeah, he's got course form here. Robert Rock was third here in 2015 and 12th in a recent event in Portugal. He's three-figure price as well. And the final one, this guy's way out of form, but absolutely loves it here. Gary Stahl is 200-1, I think.
Yeah.
He was top 10 the last 2 years here. But since that six last year in this event, nothing better than 34th on tour.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Just a host of miscuts.
Yeah.
MC. he's 200-1 in an event that he's finished top 10 in the last 2 years. That shows how bad he's playing. Be a leap of faith maybe to back him, but you'd have to say he did show a little bit of sprinkling of a return to form. It would be interesting, wouldn't he? But Slattery catches my eye a little bit if I was to pick any of them, though.
I quite like a couple of Englishmen. You've mentioned a couple there. I like David Horsey, who's definitely got the game for this venue. Not been able to conquer it yet, but he's had a few good rounds, very good rounds at Diamond Club. Not been able to capitalise on those positions and string four rounds together, but it wouldn't surprise me if he went well. He's 40-1 in the betting, David Horsey. And the one I think I was most tempted to side with is Graham Storm at 50-1. He famously thought he'd lost his card at the end of last season.
Indeed.
In the end, hadn't. And he's taken advantage of that reprieve. He won the South African Open in mid-January, holding off Rory McIlroy. Finished sixth at Wentworth a couple of weeks ago. Made his last six cuts, which is something in this field that's got to be respected. And if he had slightly better course form, I think I'd be involved at 50s. He's played here four times, missed the cut on three of those occasions, but has finished tied 10th on the other outing. I thought 50-1.
Yeah, you make a fair Storm. Case there, because, I mean, the times he'll have missed the cut, he's had some bad times on tour, hasn't he? So the fact that he's managed to get a 10th in there is probably somewhat reassuring, and his game's he's transformed. I saw him interviewed after one of his recent rounds, and he's, you know, he's very grateful for where he is, let's put it that way, and he's enjoying it and making the most of it, so absolute credit to him to do that.
And he was banging contention, wasn't he, at Wentworth? And
he was,
think about that field.
Yeah, slightly better than this one.
Yeah, so 50-1, I think. If I was to have a bet, it would be Graham Storm.
I get that. Should also mention the mechanic, Miguel Angel Jimenez.
Yeah, of course.
40-1, darting away from the Champions Tour to play here in Austria. He could give a good account of himself. He's in good form, you know.
Does his wife live in Austria? I'm sure there's some local connection with Austria. I think it's his wife that's either is Austrian or lives in Austria, and they've got a house there.
Oh, you've got me on that one.
So
right.
I think that's what it is, but I've not. Don't quote me on that. But I'm sure there's some sort of local connection with Miguel Angel Jimenez.
Yeah,
there is
a Champions Tour event this week, which quite a few of the Strickers missing it. He's missing it. It's not quite as strong as it might be, but. Interesting, he's still got loads of ability, you know.
Yeah, I could see him playing very well. 40-1, Miguel Angel Jimenez. Let's talk about the PGA Tour event in the lead up to the US Open then. This is the FedEx St. Jude Classic, and we've had a couple of withdrawals, high profile withdrawals as well. Steve Stricker's pulled out of here.
Oh, right.
Jamie Lovemark's pulled out as well. I think a few of the players that managed to qualify for the US Open in those sectionals.
Stricker did qualify, didn't he?
Yeah, he did qualify for Evan Hills, and I know that was high up on his list this season, so he's decided to pull out and prepare for the US Open next week. When are we going to see Steve Stricker on the champ? Just becoming a cash cow on the Champions Tour.
It hasn't happened yet, has it? There's some.
It's got to happen, hasn't it?
Like, Lang is playing brilliantly. Some other players are playing really well. Stricker's doing. He's playing well enough. So
he's got a lot on, hasn't he? He's the President's Cup captain. Yeah. He's still trying to compete on the main tour.
Yeah.
I suppose when the Champions Tour does become his main focus,
he'll win a bit more.
Yeah, you'll see him racking up a few wins.
He'll definitely be a multiple winner. Don't you worry about that.
Ricky Fowler is the favourite this week for the FedEx St Jude, 8-1 here with William Hill. Brooks Koepka is 10-1. Adam Scott is 14s. Francesco Molinari is 16-1. Phil Mickelson 16-1, Kyle Stanley is 22s, Billy Horschel and Daniel Berger, and Russell Henley all 25s, and it's 33s and bigger the remainder. Always interesting event the week before the US Open, and it's a good track as well, TPC Southwind. It's a one that Phil Mickelson speaks very positively about, and it's not a venue you can really negotiate successfully without having your A game. You've got to be strong from tee to green here. That's what I always think, Mike.
Yeah, I think a second shot probably more than a driver's shot cost, Dave, if I was to pick one criteria that probably is better than the other. Yeah, I think you can get away with a little bit of waywardness off the tee, but what you really do need to do is get your irons going well, because the greens are not big, the greens are tight, and it's hard to scramble around here. But if you can get your ball close to the hole, it always helps that, obviously, doesn't it? But if you can do that, I think that gives you a big help. And the great thing about this course, Dave, is that different types of players contend and win here. You've got some real shorties who've won here, but then you've got guys like Brooks Koepka, who hits it a mile, has a great record around here. So it's a good mix of, yeah, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head. If you've got to play well here, you've got to put well here. Mm. You know, but second shot, it would be my main criteria, and then put the lights out if you can. That said, winning scores normally about 13 under, that kind of thing. So, but you do need to hold a few putts.
Yeah, you do. And that's the... I've got one pick in this event, and that's the negative with my pick.
Putting.
I do like the player that I'm going to pick, obviously, but putting would be his Achilles heel at the moment. So I'm
that'd be a worry.
A definite worry.
I do think putting's important here because of the size of the green, Jim.
Yeah, yeah. You look at those last two winners, Daniel Berger, who won by three last year, and Fabian Gomez, the winner in 2015. Both actually led the field in strokes gained tee to green. And there's a whole host of players that have featured prominently on the leaderboards in the last 5 or 6 years that have been up there in strokes gained on the approach as well, which is a
engine regulation.
Yeah.
If you look at their figures, that seem to matter here as well. It's the same thing, really, isn't it? Broadly speaking.
There are some meaty par fours on the layout as well, because it only plays to 7,244 yards, but it is a par 70. So just two fives on the layout, which has got to be factored in as well. So maybe look at your par four scoring around this venue.
Definitely.
Just one pick for me.
Two for me.
Okay,
so
let you lead
off. My first pick is... Just checking to see whether you picked the same guy and you haven't. Russell Henley is my first pick. He's 25-1, which is not the biggest price, but he's in ever such good form, I think. Won at Houston, was 11th in the US Masters. Understandably, a bit of a dip after that, 26th and 35th at Heritage and TPC. Ludicrously missed the cut at Byron Nelson, where he was toddling along nicely after a poor first round. He was toddling along nicely in the second round, 500 for the round through 14, then lost five shots in three holes. Went treble bogey bogey to miss the cut by a couple of shots. So I wouldn't be, I might live to regret this, but I hope that was just a bit of a blip, because it certainly wasn't an auspicious ending to his tournament. But he's in good form. He won there, as we said, at Houston. He also got good finishes at places like Valspar this season. His form here is nicely progressive. I'm hoping 27th, a miscut in the middle, I suppose. That's not progression, is it? But then went 7th last year, where he topped the greens in reg stats in this event. And in all the stats you might have talked about earlier, is at the very least top 30, greens in reg, strokes gained putting tee to green, strokes gained total, strokes off the tee, par four scoring average, par four performance. He's top 10 in a number of those or thereabouts, top 30 in them all. That's very interesting this week for someone who can put as well as Russell Henley. So, and he is 9th strokes gained putting. So I like his chance.
25-1, Russell Henley. Won't mind it if the wind blows as well, which can be a factor.
Absolutely. He's played well in Hawaii and other windy parts of the world.
I'm going with Harold Varner the third, or Harold Varner is, as he is on the William Hill website. 66-1. If you're looking through the season-long stats for Harold Varner, you're not going to back him, basically, because there's not that much to recommend him this week. He's had a quiet season after winning the Australian PGA Championship. But the thing I like about Varner is that he has a tendency to hint that something is close and then go on and perform and produce a high finish. And that's what he did at Memorial last week. He finished 19th on the difficult golf course. But that doesn't tell the full tale. He ranked 4th in strokes gained tee to green, and 2nd in strokes gained approaching the green, which I think are keys this week, as we mentioned. And in addition to this, he was 16th on his tournament debut at Southwind last year. The one negative, and I mentioned this at the top, is that he hasn't recorded positive strokes gained putting since the Houston Open. He has to put better to contend and win. His best performances, though, come in Australia, and you need that sort of iron control in similarly windy conditions that you need here at Southwind. So I expect him to have a big week. I think when his ball striking comes good, Harold Varner, he can string those performances together. And I thought 66-1 was interesting. So I've gone with Harold Varner as my solitary selection in this event.
Very good. You picked the wrong 66-1 shot.
Go on.
Brian Gay is my pick in this one.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. A past winner in this event, actually, 2009. 4 top 10s in the event. Actually, I'd have liked a little bit higher than 66s. I think Mark Adzed and his motley crew have spotted him a little bit there. So I've been for a little bit bigger than 66. But I still think that's a decent price. Was coming into a real good bit of form when he was 6 in the Heritage, followed up by the exact same position in Texas the week after, 2-6 on the trot. Then a couple of mid-division performances in the Wells Fargo and the Byron Nelson around the TPC miscut, which wouldn't be that unusual. But again, 34th at Dean and DeLuca is not an awful finish for him. Brian Gay is not long off the tee, so he knows he's only got a certain amount of events each year to capitalise on, and this is definitely one of them. This is a course he loves, past winner, and he know he's 45 now, so he needs to, you know, if he's going to get any more wins on tour, they've got to come pretty soon probably, but he's putting very well again. He's always very good on the greens, and this year he's 13th on the strokes game putting stats, so that has influenced me with alongside his love for Southwind to put him up at 66. I think he's going to go really well this week. Mm. I like his chances. He's top 70 on tour for strokes gained total and for the par four performance that you referenced earlier, which considering on a lot of courses he's probably not long enough, it's not, that's not bad. It shows he's got signs of breaking through, and those two sixth finishes are very eye-catching.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that. 66-1, Brian Gay. A man in a similar mould, we've got the selections out of the way now, a man in a similar mould to Brian Gay that I looked at was Chad Campbell.
Yeah.
At 125-1. Very similar players.
Good course form, yeah.
Yeah, good course form. Campbell's not as good a putter as Gay, but he is rolling a little bit better, or has been in his last couple of events. Finished 13th at the Byron Nelson, 34th at the Dean and DeLuca on his last two starts. Couple of top tens in his last five starts in this tournament. He hasn't won for a decade.
Wow.
But this is a course that definitely suits his game. So he caught my eye, Chad Campbell, at 125-1, just as maybe someone you want to back. Maybe in those top 20, top 10 markets, or if you want to go each way with those six places on offer.
Yeah. Someone else who hasn't won in a decade, Phil Mickelson. No, I'd be facetious. He hasn't won in a while, though, has he? But he has fantastic... I love Phil, by the way.
Yeah, you know that.
He's great form here. So I wouldn't put anyone off him at 16s. You know, he's not playing next week because of his daughter's graduation, which I think is... He's got a bit of stick for it, but I think that's totally acceptable.
Yeah, I wonder if I was being cynical. Do you think he's had a look at Erin Hills? Do you think he's been there and maybe had a glance at
it? Maybe he has. I've not read anything about
it. I've not either. This is pure speculation on my part.
I've heard it's going to be tough, but that's Shane Lowry tweeted that the other day. It's going to be very tough. They say that every year, don't they?
It's always tough, isn't it?
It's always tough. And he has finished second there 28 times in the US Open, and not at Erin Hills, but in the event. He's used to tough US Open tracks. I suppose a more interesting fact is, does he actually think that maybe
he can't win it?
Maybe. I don't know. Look, he's a real big family man. I think it's just that, personally. Yeah, that's my gut feeling. Because he knows that he contended last year in majors, certainly in the Open. So... yeah, good. Well, fair play to Phil. But I think he'll go well this week, Dave. He's got great course form here, and he's in decent nick.
There's still time for a U-turn on that as well. If there's some way they can give him that a really early tee time on the Thursday and then a late start on the Friday.
Is that right?
Well, it seems to me that he's withdrawn so early. Maybe to put a little bit of pressure on the USGA. Maybe
they'd want him there, wouldn't they?
Yeah, maybe to get both in somehow. I'm not sure if it's feasible, but he does have a private jet, and maybe if he got an early tee time on Thursday and a late start on Friday, possibly. There's still time for a U-turn, that's all I'm saying. It wouldn't amaze me if he did happen to...
Well, I hope he's in it. Every tournament's better for having him there.
It'd be a shame if he did miss out on the US Open. And I agree with you, it is commendable that he's... And he's always been such a family man. Got a big chance this week. If you had, if I gave you a tenner and you had a fiver each way, would you put it on Phil Mickelson or Francesco Molinari?
Phil Mickelson.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At this course, yeah. I don't know Molinari's record, to be truthful, but it must be pretty decent for him to be 16-1 in this event. But he's just not a player.
You'd have a back at that sort of price?
Not in a million.
Yeah.
He's a really solid, great professional, and he is in great form. But I don't think he's any... course on that I can particularly remember. So he looks very short to me. I mean, Brooks Koepka is a player I really, really like, and he's got superb course form, but I don't know if he's playing that well
I don't think he's playing his best at the moment, Brooks Koepka. I wouldn't want to back him at 10-1.
You could argue if he's going to win anywhere at the moment, somewhere like this where he really likes Southwind, it might be the place. But I'm not for him or Ricky Fowler at 8s and 10s. I think they're poor value market leaders. Of course they can win. Ditto Adam Scott. But that's why I went a little bit away. I was much nearer to Billy Horschel following up his recent win with another one. I thought he was eye-catching. But Henley of the sub 33-1 shots, again, that isn't on. It's not massively generous, but I just think he's got a big chance here.
I liked Kyle Stanley, but not 22-1.
Yeah. I was about to say that.
You know what's happened here? He's playing fantastically well. Ball striking's been great recently. Tied fourth at the Players, tied sixth at Memorial. But for a period yesterday, I didn't notice that William Hill were standout 40-1 on Kyle Stanley. And I think this is a case of we've taken evasive tactics. We've taken everything we want to take at 40-1 and we're not going to take a penny more because no one's going to back him at 22-1 now.
No, I wouldn't be backing him at that. I wouldn't be backing him at 40s either, for that matter. But not to say that he's no chance, but he's not got an amazing... Missed two of his last three cuts here, for example.
Yeah.
This is a course where I think you need to know it. Although Daniel Berger, I think it was his debut last year, wasn't it, when he won?
Yeah.
I thought you might be interested in him this week.
Yeah, he's not playing brilliantly, is he?
No, he's not. It wouldn't be for me either with all the distractions and that you get at being a defending champion, so no, he didn't caught my eye. Kepka was interesting had he been double the price, but not a 10-1. The horse was really close for me, I have to say.
Yeah.
Sung Yul No, good course form, but
50-1.
Too short.
Yeah.
And if I had to throw in a real massive outsider, Carl Pettersson, at about 300-1 or something like that, he has in the past played quite well here. Not for a while, but.
He is 300-1.
Yeah, he's missed a whole range of cuts this year, but I think he's got an 11th in there somewhere, something like that. One decent finish, which just shows that there might be a bit of fight in the old dog. Yeah, and he does like it here. And
can't be long till he's on the seniors tour, can it, Carl Pettersson? Or is he not as old as I think he is?
How old do you think he is?
Linking heck, he's only 39 years old.
Yeah, I don't think he's
he's a long way off. I do apologise.
I'm not getting
Carl.
To how he looks. Let's
apologise.
Yeah, he's nowhere near, is he? He was third here in 2014, for example. And I'm just checking, it was the 16th. He's followed that up with four missed cuts in his last five events. But look, 300-1.
I can't believe I've just said that.
The 39-year-old Carl Pettersson.
I think he feels like he's been around for ages, Carl Pettersson. Really does. Well done to...
He won't be sending you a Christmas card, will he? Mrs. Pettersson will be particularly unhappy as well.
Yeah,
they'll
be... I do apologise, Carl.
A top 20, given he's got some decent form here down the years. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if you wanted a mad outsider. Just checking, he was 16th at the Texas Open a few outings ago.
He's 8-1 to finish inside the top 20.
That looks a little bit short, doesn't it, if anything? But
Okay, recap your selections then, Mike, and then give us your player you don't want to win. Yes. I presume that Billy Horschel would be the man you don't want to win.
Billy Horschel's definitely the man I don't want to win, because I did think long and hard about him, but I just think Henley's a better putter and will be the right man this week.
Yeah.
The horse likes it here, though. I haven't got anything in Europe, Dave, so my two picks are in the FedEx St. Jude, and it's a point each way, Russell Henley at 25s, and a point win, half a point place, Brian Gay at 66.
I think the player I wouldn't want to win this, I think if I was going to have a bet in that Lioness Open, it would be Graham Storm, so I'd go Graham Storm as the man I don't want to win. And in the FedEx St. Jude, just the one pick, and I'm going each way, a point each way, Harold Varner. At 66-1 as my sole selection.
Three places this week.
That would be good.
That'd be good.
That would be a miracle, I think. But it would be good as well. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Do follow Mike on Twitter at mgrenham. You can follow myself at dkellner. Thank you for your company, Mike.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure. And next week,
big one. US Open at Erin Hills. I'm looking forward to learning a little bit more about the golf course over the next.
That's a bit of a challenge,
days.
Isn't it?
Always a bit of a challenge when it's a tournament that migrates like that.
Yeah, and. There's always a lot of myths before the event. It's always going to be the most penal of all time. Be interesting to see how the USGA, without having next week's podcast today, be interesting to see how the USGA reacts. They've had a lot of criticism, haven't they, in recent times for certain things. So they need to get this one right, I think, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think given the way the greens were at Chambers Bay, and from what I've read, it's because it's in Wisconsin, is it? It might be similar to Whistling Straits, something like that. It looks like a decent venue. And the reports that I've read players have been positive about it. So
I love the US Open.
It's fantastic.
So
I'm sure you've already got a couple of players in
mind. I have a couple in mind, yeah.
We'll talk about that next week. Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Do follow us both on Twitter, and make sure you download via iTunes, and you can leave a rating and a comment on iTunes as well. And check out all the golf betting on the William Hill website. Just go to williamhill.com and click on the golf page. And myself, Mike, and Dave Tindall will be back next week for the US Open 2017.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.